So I kind of set out on a mission to learn as much as I could. And
Power to Live More with Joe Dodds.
Welcome to the Power to Live More podcast, all about productivity, organization, well-being, energy, and resilience. I'm Jo Dodds, and I started this show to enable interesting people to share their stories about how they use their power to live more, and by that I mean to do the stuff that they want to do more than the stuff that they need to or should do. It's about creating a life for yourself where you have the energy, health and space to be happy and fulfilled, spending your time as you'd like, whether that be at work, home or somewhere else entirely. That's your choice.
Hello. My name is Ellie Dodds and I'm co-presenter, and today Joe's interviewing Tony Miltenberger. Joe and Tony met through the podcasting Facebook group that last week's guest, Jan, runs. Tony's lead pastor at Restoration Church in Centerville, Ohio, and married to his high school sweetheart with three children aged 13, 8 and 6. He spent 14 years in the Army Reserve as a chaplain's assistant with deployments all over the world. It was through those deployments that he was forced to look at the values in his life in new ways, including how to be happily married and where he was spending his time. He's the author of Unbreakable, Forging a Marriage of Content and Delight, Abingdon 2014, a book written about his own marital struggles and other struggles that he saw after service deployments. He has a Master's of Divinity from United Theological Seminary and is a coach for kids sports and avid Reds, Bengals and Buckeyes fan. Back to studio.
Today I'm interviewing Tony Miltenberger of Restoration Church Centerville in Ohio. So welcome, Tony. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. It's an honor to be on.
So pleased to get you on here, in fact, with having connected via a Facebook group for podcasters. So I'm on my best behavior now that I've got another professional.
Oh, I'm definitely not professional, and I don't like best behavior. I'd rather just be kind of raw.
Yeah, it sounds much better. I told you already I'm having a bit of a bad day, so it might go all a bit random. So I just warn you now.
Perfect. Perfect.
So tell us what you do and where you do it.
Sure. Well, I'm a pastor. I'm the lead pastor of a church in Centerville, Ohio. And Ohio, if you're not familiar with the U.S., is kind of like Midwest, below Michigan, below the Great Lakes, above Kentucky. So we're north of the Mason-Dixon line in the Midwest, and Centerville is in the southwest corner near Cincinnati. So we're kind of smack dab in the middle of the United States, and Centerville specifically is in the bottom left portion of Ohio. And I serve as a lead pastor in a church here of about 300 or 400, and do a little blogging, podcasting, and just love connecting with people.
Lovely. I always think it's interesting when I interview people from the States, because I've generally heard of most of the places that they mention, but I generally have no idea where they all sit in terms of the map. I'm reasonably good on the UK, but I think most people aren't very good even here. So
I think most US people aren't very good at it either. Geography is just not a strong suit.
No. Well, it's such a big place, isn't it?
Right. Sprawling. Yeah.
So interesting to hear the numbers of the church. I think about our local church, they might say those numbers, but I never see that number in church unless there's like a big concert or something. And is it in the sort of certain areas of America, it's quite the whole church thing's much bigger than it is over in the UK, I think, but correct me if
I'm
wrong.
They would say that in the kind of the Midwest and below the Mason-Dixon line, what we would call the Bible Belt, that right. Churches are still really big. And even in my community, we're not really a big church comparable. There's two churches of over several thousand just in my town. Right. And so we're kind of a local church, like a neighborhood church. A lot of our people that attend here live within a couple miles, but we offer, you know, that unique sense of authentic community, and we work really hard to connect people with each other and with their faith walk.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I was singing in Prague last year in a choir that I'm in. And on the Sunday, we sang a mass at a Catholic church over there. And it was a really big, it looked almost like Stalinist. It was really sort of stark and square. And we'd just been in like the oldie worldy beautiful church the previous day. So it was quite an odd environment to be in. But what surprised me was that most of the congregation were young people, and it looked really formal. And then when they went to do communion, they actually went out into the congregation and actually offered communion while they were all sort of seated and stuff. Whereas in England, it's very much you sort of troop to the front of the church, whether you're, you know, Church of England or Catholic. And it was quite a contrast. But it was what really surprised me was that it was the whole the age profile compared to, you know, churches in my experience in the UK are very much the older generation, you know, with a few younger people, whereas there it just seemed to be full of young people, which I thought, you know, was really interesting. And I guess it's just interesting how, you know, religion and churches are just different all around the world. And we think that society is moving in certain ways, but from what I see, I don't know that there's a pattern to it at all, really.
I haven't been able to identify a pattern at all. And I'm 38. And when I came to the church as the lead pastor, I was, that was 4 years ago. So I was 34. Mm-hmm. And the whole reason they brought me in was to get the church younger, because right, so many yeah. of the kind of the demographic of the congregation was significantly older. And we've done that. But in contrast to that formality, we've gone informal. So I generally, when I preach and teach, I do it in jeans, and it's a super relaxed atmosphere. We took out the pews and put in chairs, and we use contemporary music. And that's kind yeah. of the way that things are going here in the U.S. But I think you're right. I'm not sure that anyone can quite figure out what this faith trend looks like and what's going to be next. And we say here all the time that it has to be the mission over the method. Rather, yes, the mission of yeah. why we're doing has to be so much more important than the method. And I joke that if bagpipes will bring people into the church, then let's use it. I mean, whatever works.
So tell us more about why you do what you do. You've had a fairly interesting background. You already mentioned a bit of it. So tell us how you got to where you are now.
So when I was a student, I witnessed my parents' divorce, and it was a fairly traumatizing event. And the only thing that kind of helped me through that was this youth ministry group that I was a part of, and then this group that was kind of like JROTC, like a junior military kind of group. And so when I was in high school, I clung to those two things for my sanity, and then eventually became a chaplain's assistant in the Army Reserve here in the United States. And so then I was doing ministry in the Army and just continued to find structure and faith, giving me hope and grace. And so I do what I do to try to give people the same thing that the church gave me. And that's a vision for something bigger than whatever circumstances are going through my life right now.
Yeah. So, was that the theme all through? So when you're in the Army Reserves, that was what you had in mind at the time, or is that where you've come to, having then sort of lived your life to this point?
It's definitely where I've come to. I would say that part of my journey with the Army and was about escaping and trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. Mm. It was something I was good at and I was drawn to, but it wasn't necessarily, I couldn't have articulated, you know, kind of my understanding of why I was doing it back then, like I can now. I just needed something, and I wasn't mature enough for school or college, and I needed to figure out what the next step of my life was, and the Army was a great way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you had a bit of an advantage over your colleagues when coming out of the Army, because you sort of had something that you'd done before that was I know you all learn skills in the military, but quite often it's quite difficult coming out of the military into something in, what do you call it in America? We call it Civvy Street. What do you call it?
going into we would just kind of call it going into the private sector.
Okay. Well, it was much posher in America.
Right. this is what I'll say is that in all of my ministry training, it's been great, but one thing that they don't really do very well in ministry training, from my experience, is teach you how to lead people. And the military does a tremendous job of helping you lead people. And we joke all the time that the church would be perfect if it weren't for all the people. right. And so, you know, for us, like being a young pastor with military experience means that I'm not naive about how the people part of this business is going to work. Whereas a lot of my colleagues struggle because they've never managed people in tenuous or difficult situations. But I've been deployed around the world a couple times. And through that experience, the Army has kind of given me this prepackaged portfolio of leadership.
Yeah. So talk us through what a sort of average day looks like. And I know you're going to tell me there isn't one, but what sort of things do you do?
Well, I am a big proponent of block scheduling, if you're familiar with that, in terms of how I operate my calendar. I also know that I'm at my best from 5 a.m. to 10 a.m. So I set up my day so that my mornings are predominantly where I do my writing and my research and where I do my creative stuff. I think I have my best creative brain in the morning. So most days I will do try to go to the gym in the morning after some initial private study, usually 4:30, 5 a.m. I'm at the gym by 6. And then I'm usually writing by 7:30 or 8. And then I'll write and I'll block that out usually till about 10, depending on how the morning goes. And then the rest of the day is connecting with people. And I try to be really intentional about making sure that I never lose sight of the people part of this job. And then every day I'm home to get my kids off of the school bus at 2:30. So I do that because a lot of my work takes me to the evening activities, when I'm going to connect with more people and meetings, and kind of the business of the church happens with the congregation at night. So I'm home from 2:30 till 5, and I spend that time with my kids, and I try to intentionally be there for them. And then usually 2 to 3 nights a week, I have to go back to the church in the evening and then do some meetings and such.
Yes. Yeah. Do you think the life of being a pastor actually helps with that structuring, because there's those demands on your time?
I think so. I think the beautiful part about where I'm at least, and the people that I get to work with and serve, and is that I get to set the culture as the lead pastor. And so just like any organization, the culture that you set kind of helps dictate the health, I believe. So I've set up everything so that we can work virtually. We don't have to be in the church, because the truth is, the people that you're trying to reach aren't here. You know, our target audience is not walking into my office to talk to me about their faith. Our target audience is in the community. So, you know, we want to set up ourselves so that we can be in the community and do stuff. And then you can take that flexible time as you need it. I take a nap almost every day, and all of my staff have couches in their offices. because we work weird hours, and so sometimes you just need to get fresh. And I find that a good 15-minute nap is one of the ways that I can do that. So I'll do that, and then I can go back and have a better mindset for the evening.
Now, I don't know many lead pastors in America. but I do know a lot of line managers, and I do know a bit about productivity and so on. And you're painting a picture to me of sort of a great place to work, which I talk about on a different podcast that I'm involved in with the UK movement around employee engagement. So, you know, just in a short space of time, you've given me some some indication of sort of flexibility, you know, using technology to improve the way that you operate rather than sort of overwhelm people and get in the way of it. And, you know, having that flexibility, understanding that you need flexibility and therefore you're giving flexibility. Is that unusual? Bearing in mind, you're the only lead pastor I know in America, probably, never mind just Ohio.
I feel very honored. I would say it is. I would say that it's a trend that people like me, and Joe, you and I kind of share that similar vision for creating a place where people are is life-giving. As I've looked at your body of work, I feel like that's one of your missions that I see over and over again. And the thing about the church work is that it never ends. So if we don't find a way to be life-giving to the people that are called to this mission, eventually what'll happen is you'll just burn them out.
Yeah.
And I worked at a big mega church before becoming a lead pastor here, and they did a lot of things well, but the expectation that we would be on all the time was very overwhelming, and it led to some really bad habits in my life. And so I've kind of created a culture where I hoped that I would never do that as a leader for someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. I was at a conference yesterday chairing the employee engagement and motivation stream, and one of my colleagues at Engage for Success, who's an entrepreneur, came to speak, and she's quite I described her as mad as a box of frogs, but brilliant. And in fact, she's been on my podcast. So for anyone listening who wants to go back and hear from her name's Laura Morgan. I think she was on 79 or something, and she was saying that her one of her team had just called her that morning and said that there was a problem with one of her parents, I think illness wise or something, and was it okay if she took the afternoon off or something? And she was brilliant because she just told the whole audience. She said, so I told her, Sarah, if we ever have to have the conversation again about whether you should be putting family above your work, she said, I will fire you.
That's beautiful.
And I just thought, it's just so lovely because, you know, she really paints a picture of, you know, really tough, you know, sales driven successful business, but with absolute brilliant values, which are that, you know, you're each and every one of you is important, and you have to look after yourselves first and foremost, because otherwise we can't do all these things that we want to do in the business. And I just thought it was such a, you know, refreshing perspective to have, and you know what you're saying sort of fits with that.
And we have our cultural values, our kind of our staff values, and we put them in every single office. And one of them is that we believe in family first and courageous truth and individual ownership of the mission. Like if this organization is dependent on me to manage the day-to-day activities of the staff, we will fail miserably because I'm horrible at that. That's not even what I'm here for. I'm here to be a teacher, preacher, visionary, not a manager of people. And I'm horrible at it. Horrible.
Shall we send a memo to them just to remind them of that?
Oh, they know because they're always asking me about this detail or that detail, and I'm like, I don't know. If you don't know it, I don't know it.
Brilliant. So you talked a bit about making it so that people don't have to be in the church or in their office even to get the job done. You talked about using technology. What sort of tech are you using? What sort of apps and tools and things do you use, and do you get your team to use?
Well, so we are big Slack users here.
Mm-hmm.
And we love Slack. And actually, we have a communication hierarchy because we all work virtually. So a lot of the week anyway. So the kind of the rule of thumb is that if you email, and we use Outlook, if you email, then you basically have 24 hours to respond. If you Slack, then we respond within the workday. And then if we text, you respond within a couple hours. And if I call, pick up the phone.
Yeah.
And we kind of have that as kind of a stated value system. And then we also use Dropbox quite a bit to share files. And then the last thing is that we probably use the most is we use Voxer for kind of team group messaging with, you know, audio.
Voxer, did you say?
Voxer. It's a walkie-talkie. Yeah. Yeah, walkie-talkie.
Oh, yeah. I'm just sitting here smiling to myself, thinking, I know that our church probably doesn't speak for all of the churches in the UK, but the idea of the key people in it using Slack. I know a number of them, as they are involved with my local choral society, which is also of people of a certain age. And yeah, I mean, email is almost a step too far.
And honestly, most of my now I'm one of the older people on our team at 38. We have a very young staff, and that was part of that vision of getting younger. But and they all hate email. They hate it. And so it's the least effective way to communicate. And oftentimes I have to put notes at the bottom of the email just to see if they read all the way to the bottom.
Brilliant. Interesting. In our team at Engage for Success, we use Slack, but we've got some new people who've come from the public sector where email is, you know, everything, and they copy everyone in and all that sort of stuff. And it's been interesting, again, even though I knew this because it's happened before, to see how the prevailing preference starts to change what's already here. Because if you've just received an email from somebody copying everyone else in, then the natural thing to do is reply to it. It's not natural to sort of go to Slack to reply to an email. And it's interesting, you know, that you have to live the process as well as just have the tool, don't you?
Well, and I find that the leader sets the tone for so much of that, that if I email, then they'll respond an email. But if I jump to Slack, then they'll jump to Slack too, because that's where we're communicating. And so even creating, putting files into Slack and using the fullness of the Slack function is an important way to remind the team that this is something that we say we value and we have to practice.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about writing earlier, and I guess some of that is your, I've completely forgotten the word, the things sermon. You say when you're in church.
Sermon, you got it. I'm here to help you. We're in it together.
I thought you might have thought, you know, come up with a new funky name for it or something. I was just giving you that opportunity.
Sometimes we call it a talk.
Yeah, okay, talk, your presentation, your whatever. Sure. Yeah, your sermon. So, but you've also written a book in the past, haven't you?
I have. In 2014, I published a book through Abington Press called Unbreakable, Forging a Marriage of Contentment and Delight. I wrote that with a co-author named Charles Causey. And writing is one of my passions, and writing about relationships is a huge passion in my life, because I think, you know, obviously we can't get around the world without being in relationships, but yet we don't often take time to learn about what it means to be in those relationships. So we wrote that book after doing a year of marriage retreats for soldiers coming back from deployment, from war. And after that year, we realized that, man, there's a need here that we could might be able to help meet to write about what does God's love look like in the concept of your marriage. And so it was a passion project. Anyone who's written knows that it's like it's a labor of love, and it's insanely maddening the whole time. especially writing with a co-author, because you're constantly kicking stuff back and forth, going, no, that's garbage. You can't say that like that, or you got to change that, and trying to get that constant voice. And eventually what we did is just he took a chapter, I took a chapter, and went back and forth like that. So we found a way to make it work.
So it was written through some of your own experience, as well as the sort of service that you were providing for those returning army people, wasn't it? You talk about the challenges that you found yourself having been deployed.
It was interesting. I was deployed in 2004, and it was 2004 to 2005. And while I was deployed, there was a sense of engagement that really appealed to my type A personality. Because the mission is always so important, right? And you're over there and you're serving, and it's very fulfilling. It's very purposeful work, and it feels like it's the most important thing in the world. Mm. Well, I came home, and we shortly found out after me coming home that were pregnant with our first child. And there was a lot of celebration after coming home. I struggled to find any sense of meaning in the world that I lived in when I got home. And so much so that there was a day, and I'll never forget it, Joe. There was a day that my wife asked me to take out the trash, and I began to yell, "Take out the trash! Do you know what I've done? Do you know what I've seen?" And I just lost it. Yeah. And I remember going to my knees and leaning onto my wife's pregnant belly, and as my tears kind of just hit her feet, I remember saying, "I think I have to go back to the war, because it's the only thing that makes sense."
Wow.
And it wasn't until I held my son Connor, who looked me in the eyes, and it wasn't until I held him that I realized I have to figure this out. I have to figure out what it means to be married with all this messiness in my own head, this kind of sense of call and purpose and how to be in a relationship when I didn't know how to talk about anything that I had been through.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of set out on a mission to learn as much as I could. And the Army has all of these opportunities to go on retreats. And so I would sign up for every single one. And if there was an online class, I would take it. And so we used all sorts of marriage curriculum. And eventually I kept showing up at so many things that the Army said, "Hey, why don't you teach this?" and that's how I got the opportunity to do that. And that was 2007 when I was deployed to Minnesota, which is like the cold, horrible part of the United States. It's a beautiful country, but it gets very cold in the winter. And we were stationed in Minnesota, but we would travel around that kind of Midwest part of the United States doing those retreats. And that's what led us to writing the book.
Yeah. That's such a powerful story, particularly as you say that your wife was pregnant at the time where you had that sort of, I don't know if you call it a breakdown, but, you know, at that moment you did have something on the horizon, which quite often carries people through, you know, at that moment. But, you know, even that was not, you know, making that happen at that particular moment. I think people, my daughter's best friend's dad's in the Army. And I, until I met them 10 years ago, I didn't know anything about really the military. And it's interesting. It's like a different society almost, isn't it? Because we don't ever truly understand what that's like for people. And, you know, I think you've, you know, given a window into it from what you've just said. And my mother-in-law sometimes will talk about someone we know whose husband is in the Marines, and, you know, she said, I think he actually quite enjoys it. And I'm a bit like, well, that's sort of why people do the job they do. You know, you can't really sort of imagine that most people don't like it, because they do. That's why they do it. But it doesn't make sense to people like us who don't do it.
Well, it is a different world. I think you're right. It's a different world, and then it requires a different type of person. And then once you're in it, just like anything, you become more acclimated to it. So then it becomes, it's like work, and then it's also your identity, and then it becomes your life, and it becomes your community, and it is sort of all consuming. And even, you know, after being in for, you know, over a dozen years, I got out, and feels like the church is a natural fit. Because it kind of does the same thing for me. It's got a high sense of mission and calling. It creates community. It creates kind of this identity. And so I see a counselor every month. And that's one of the things that we've talked about, is separating my personal identity from my work identity, so that I can be the healthiest that I can be in serving my family as a husband to my wife, and as, you know, a dad to my kids. Like, I don't need to be Sergeant Meltenberger, and I don't need to be Pastor Tony. I just need to be Tony or Dad.
Yes. And you talked a bit about that by sort of carving out that time when the children come home from school and so on. How else do you make sure that happens? As you say, when you're working in an organization where it is 24/7 or could be, apart from carving out that time, what other things can you do to make that sort of divide and ensure that you're not losing that sort of family connection? I imagine some people feel they've still got it because the family quite often are involved in, I mean, it's not the same when you're actually
Sure.
deployed in the army, but on patches and things, everyone's in the army, and in your case, everyone's in the church, presumably. But that isn't truly being your family, is it? If it's on someone else's sort of plan as well, if you see what I mean.
Right. And the other thing is that oftentimes the church can feel like we can't negotiate with it. So when I've got to do a funeral or a wedding, my family stuff sometimes comes second to that. And that's a difficult thing to process. And so one of the ways that we kind of overcome that is I intentionally offer to coach whatever my kids are involved in. And so if I can be there for practice in a way that lets me be directly involved with them in that kind of formation, transformation kind of sports or activities, then it gives me an opportunity to be a voice in the process that they get to see. And again, part of the benefits of creating a culture where you can set your own schedule, being a coach and then being a pastor, I can manage the two intentionally because I get to control both schedules. And so one of the rules that my wife and I made is that I wouldn't work more than 3 nights a week because I could work every night if I wanted to. But instead of saying you can't work that much, what we say is that if you only work 3 nights a week, you can do whatever else you want.
So that thing about being intentional. It's interesting. I did the sports coaching thing. I used to coach netball at Ellie's school. I'm just wondering, have you ever had them throw in the conversation that you're never around and you're too busy working, and then you have to throw back, "Ha, I've been coaching your blah 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 for the last however long. Have you forgotten that?"
My oldest is 13, and so we're not quite to that point.
that. Yeah, my daughter's always been a bit precocious at 12. She's already been there a few times.
The other thing that I love to do is we have date days with dad
Oh yeah,
that
lovely.
I do with all my kids, and we also recently when my son turned 13. My wife and I decided, and we kind of stole this idea from a number of different bloggers and podcasters, is we had this kind of what we call a yes weekend. And so the same sex parent takes the 13-year-old away for a weekend, and we say yes to anything within a budget. And then in addition to that, we had all the men in the family write my son letters about what it means to be a man. And I wrote a letter to my son as well. And then two people who are influential in his life here at the church wrote a letter. And so throughout the course of the weekend, we're giving him kind of this instruction on what it means to be in this next season of his life. And so it was really a powerful weekend for him to kind of hear this picture.
I think that's just amazing. And in fact, I was going to tell you about that, but I couldn't remember all of the stories because I'd read it on Facebook somewhere, and now I remember where I read it.
No, I blogged about it, and it clearly struck a nerve. A lot of people were really engaged in it because I think a lot of times, at least in the US culture, we forget to celebrate seasons of change and growth in life, not just in academy or in work accomplishments, but becoming 13 in our culture doesn't really mean anything because we've kind of stripped away the value of it. And I believe it's the family's job, it's my job and my wife's job to bring that back.
Yeah, no, I did. I read it because you posted it. We're friends on Facebook now, and you posted it. I read it. I thought it was brilliant. And as you know, my daughter's turning 13 in the summer, and I thought, oh, I love that idea of writing to her Anyway, and literally as you started saying, we have dad dates, I was thinking, oh yeah, I must tell them about that person who did that weekend with their son.
Well, thank you for reading it.
Brilliant. So you've recently started a podcast yourself.
I have. It's called the Reclamation Podcast, and it's all about balancing faith in life. I think sometimes we feel like our belief in something greater than ourselves competes with the busyness of our schedule. And so I've kind of set out through an interview format similar to yours and trying to talk to people about how they're cracking the code on staying connected to their mission for their own life and their connection to a higher power and what that looks like.
Mm. And so how's it going? When did you start it? How have you organized yourself to do it?
So I started in January, and like everything, I give it time on my calendar by intentionally blocking out some of that time. So typically I've got a day that I do recording and editing, and then another day where the podcast drops. But I've been talking to just people of all different walks of life. And I, of course, stacked the deck in my favor in the beginning. And I interviewed all of my friends who are also pastors. And to start for the first 4 or 5 episodes. And
See, you had a longer list than me. I wouldn't have been very good if I'd done one that needed pastors. It would have been you.
Yeah. So that is the nice part, is I know a lot of those people. I'm a screaming extrovert. I just love to be around people. So I have a ton. I'm very blessed with just a ton of people in my life who I think are very wise people. And they love to talk as well. So you can put a pastor on a podcast, and as I'm demonstrating, they'll talk all day.
Brilliant. I'll make a note of that when I'm looking for you.
They never stop talking, obviously.
Brilliant. And what about sort of tools and that process for it? Is it something that I was just talking to, in fact, to our mutual connection, Jan, who's on the podcast from probably last week by the time it gets published. And I was saying my process changes almost on a weekly basis. And because, you know, you find a tweak here, you find something else that works a bit better there. And then he gave me an idea whilst we were on the podcast. I'm gonna have to change it yet again.
Oh, what was the idea? I want to steal it.
So he uses Trello, and I use Asana for planning the process.
Okay.
And he said that he realized that whilst he did that, he also had like his bio somewhere else and his questions somewhere else, and then realized that actually he could just bring them all into a task on Trello for that person, then it would all be in one place. And whilst I was talking to him, I'm looking at my Google form and my Evernote account thinking, yeah, good point. I could have done that too. So
that's brilliant. That is brilliant. I'm definitely going to steal that. Cause I'm not even as organized as you are. And so I've basically got a Dropbox folder that's got some of my form emails on it with questions, and I do all my interviews over Skype. And so then I'll record over Skype, and I'm still very much learning what are the best practices in that. But I'm also a heavy Evernote user. I put all of my sermons in Evernote and all my questions in Evernote, and then I tag them all. And because the nature of what I teach, it's got so many different books of the Bible, I also tag them by books of the Bible so that I can, at the end of the year when I do kind of my yearly review, I look at what I've been teaching and if I'm leaning too far in a certain direction or do I need to course correct any of that. And so yeah, I'm with you on that. That is brilliant. That is really good idea. Trello, I'm writing that down.
Well, yeah, certainly I have a podcast template, which I copy for everybody. So I keep having to change it, because obviously as I keep changing my process. But it, you know, and I do, mostly I don't need to look at it because, you know, I know what I'm doing with it, but it has been really helpful. And I've started to outsource quite a big chunk of what I do as well, and that's made it really easy because I just give the VA access to Asana and then allocate the tasks. And in fact, she's chasing me now because she's working quicker than me. So not only a bit like with my show notes lady, not only is it taking the bit that was a bit of a bottleneck for me and actually you know, taking that sort of stuff away that I didn't like doing, I'm actually getting hassled from them all to give them more work and get on with it.
That's genius. I'm not to that point. We just started the podcast in January, and so my show notes are pretty awful. It's one of those things. It's like, when I figure out how to do this better, I've got to get better at show notes. And right now I'm not using any of any other resources outside of myself for the podcast process. So,
Bits that were holding me up, because I hated doing them. I don't know.
I just want to talk.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, no, as soon as I outsourced them, my podcast went back to weekly again, because nothing gets in the way now. So I recommend Dawn, who also is a podcast guest from Lidwell Writing Services, who does our amazing show notes, or rather her team do. I'm sure she's got far too much going on now to be able to do that. So what about when things don't go well for you, when you have a bad day? Or perhaps that doesn't happen. perhaps you've got divine intervention.
Oh no, it happens all the time.
so it goes all a bit horribly wrong. How do you deal with it?
Well, my wife is an incredible listener, first of all, and then the other thing that I tend to do is I try to be intentional about carving out some quiet time for. In my case, prayer, but I would recommend it to anyone, even if it's just silent meditation. I find that whatever I take in has a direct result on what I give out. So if I've had a lot of struggles in the day, then I tend to want to struggle with other people as well. So I've got to reset the paradigm by intaking something. So I'll go to scripture. I'll go to meditation. I'll take 10 minutes and just do that as a kind of a reset to get my mind right. And then I also am a huge fan of accountability, and we're a Methodist church here at Restoration. And John Wesley, he was a big believer in these things called band meetings. So every Friday I get together with another pastor and we confess our sins to each other. And it's slightly horrible. just in the sense that it's
slightly
hard to do.
Horrible go together.
Right. Well, it always starts out horrible, and then by the end it's life-giving and freeing. And because, you know, the hardest part about secrets is that you don't tell them. And so when you begin to confess kind of those deep dark feelings in your life, it is such a freeing event. So overcoming that initial cliff is the hardest part, but then once you're on the other side, then it's like, whoo, I feel so much better. I just lifted 1,000 pounds off my chest.
Yeah. Excellent. So I've got to do that, have I? Meet somebody and tell them all the bad things I've done to make myself feel better.
Just confess your sins, right? And, I've got an account. So again, I said I'm an extrovert, but I've got an accountability partner that I meet with weekly. I've got a counselor that I see monthly. And then I've got my wife who's absolutely the best and my best friend. And so I get to go home to her every night. And if I keep good, healthy people in my life to surround me, then I'm less likely to be a jerk and I'm more likely to be healthy.
I think it's great to hear that. I think it could open a can of worms to make this comment, and we're running out of time, but there's a lot of talk at the moment about men not sharing things and not sharing their emotions and not having that support. And I think it's just great when to talk to men who have got those things in place and do understand the importance of that, because I do think it is so important and you must see that in your work.
It's incredible on the different kind of person that I am when I'm doing the things that keep me healthy.
Yes.
And I don't ever see them as a chore anymore. What I see them as, what a term that I use in the Army, a force multiplier. If I do these things, then I get to continue to do whatever I want because I'm healthy, right? Mm-hmm. And you're not going to lose your job if you're healthy. You're not going to lose your family if you're healthy. You're not going to lose your passion and your mission if you're healthy. But the moment you become unhealthy, you make bad choices, you keep secrets, you do things that are outside of the values or whatever, and then things begin to crumble. I heard a mentor once say that he's 24 hours away from ruining everything in his life. And it's all based off the choices that you make on a daily basis.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So let's flip it, you know, a bit more energetically.
Yeah.
Positively sure, again. Sure. So on those days where you've had the chance to live more, so that's the bit where you get to do more of the stuff that you really want to do and less of the stuff you feel you have to do or you should do, what does that day look like for you?
For me, it's all about creating fresh and exciting content. So I love to write and podcast and speak. So if I can spend those morning hours creating fresh content and then my afternoon hours pouring into people and sharing life, then I've had a day where I've got to maximize every part of that. And yeah, in that included is spending that time with my kids and pouring into them and like throwing a little sports on top of that. And man, now you're cooking with gas.
Love it. Love it. Brilliant. So thank you, Tony. It's been great interviewing you. It's great
thank
speaking
you,
Joe. To you.
I appreciate it. I love it. I love technology and I love your mission. Thank you for doing what you do.
Lovely. So tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Well, my blog and podcast can all be found online at twmilt.com. And you can look me up on Instagram or Facebook by the same identifier, TWMILT.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you, Tony.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
All this information is available in the show notes. If you go to the link powertolivemore.com/, in this case, 103. That's powertolivemore.com/103. And then the tool that I shared on the newsletter last week was actually a VPN. So we were on holiday in Barcelona, and whilst we were there, my cousin saw a Facebook post that said that her sister was on the One Show, and so we were immediately intrigued and wanted to watch it. But we were in Spain, and I know that you just can't watch the BBC iPlayer when you're out of the country, so I had a look on the App Store on my iPad and downloaded a VPN. And as soon as it had downloaded and I'd created an account, it linked up to the Wi-Fi that I was using and it all just started working. It was really smooth. So we then watched the snippet on the One Show. It was about camping. Their children had put up a tent and they got to say how important camping has been to them through their lives. They're major campers. And we laughed, though, because they actually don't camp in a tent. They camp in a lovely caravan. But anyway, they were on the show talking about tenting. And so, yeah, we were able to watch it even though we weren't in the country. And it was just a really quick setup. So the VPN is called NordVPN, NordVPN. So that's NordVPN.com. And there's a 7-day trial before you get charged. So I'd set it up and didn't have to pay for it. I've cancelled it now because I'm not going to be abroad needing to watch anything for a period of time. But certainly if I am again and need to use a VPN, that's the one that I'll be using. So every week I mention the tool that I've shared on my newsletter. You may not be on my newsletter list. So if you aren't, if you go to powertolivemore.com and then look on the right sidebar, you can download my 5 fundamentals to using your power to live more, and that will get you added to the mailing list. And then I send the newsletter out on Friday, Saturday, or sometimes even Sunday every weekend, and that includes, as you know, the tool that I recommend, but also a link to the podcast and some other information and various useful pieces of content that I've been reading through the week as well. So if you're interested in joining the list, then go to powertolivemore.com and download my 5 fundamentals checklist, and that will get you added to the list. Again, the show notes for this week's show are at powertolivemore.com/103, and we look forward to speaking to you next week.
Use your power to live more.